that in years gone by you were named, you were known as Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And now we hear Warice.
Yes.
Can you explain how that all came about?
It's in the religious circles of Muslims, they like for the leader, if not the membership, all the membership, to have Islamic name. My Wallace was my given name, Wallace Muhammad, Wallace D. Muhammad. And now I'm called Warice Deen Muhammad, Warice Deen Muhammad, which means one who has been blessed to come into the faith. Deen means faith.
Mm-hmm.
I like the name, and I accepted it. It was suggested to me by an imam who was an immigrant Muslim. He's an old man, very religious man. He suggested that I take the name Warice, so I accepted it. Mm-hmm. But really, I'm known by Wallace. You know, I don't have any followers.
When you inherited the leadership, the organization was then known as the Nation of Islam.
Yes.
Did you want that mantle of leadership? Was that something that you sought out?
No, it was kind of put on me, you know. When I was a young, very young boy, as far back as I can remember, I was told that I was a special child, and that I was born during the time when my father was converted.
Mm-hmm.
The year that he was converted, the second year of his conversion was when I was born. And he was just enthusiastically pushing for his work, you know, and pushing his program. So they thought that by me being born at that time, and my mother too was very a devoted woman and a very zealous person in the religion. So they thought that...
Where's your mother from?
My mother's from Georgia. My father too.
Uh-huh.
My mother was Cordell, Georgia, her home. And my father, Sandersville, Georgia.
I see.
Yeah. So it was thought that by me being born at that time when they were in the peak of the excitement over the religion, a new religion for them, because they were Christians before, that influence would go into me as a child, even while I was in the womb of my mother. They believed that influence would go into me. That's what I was told. And they say that the mystic who introduced my father to his brand of Islam, said that I would... be a special child, and I would find my place in the religious leadership and be a helper, be a big helper to my father. So that's what they told me. But really, as a child, that was a burden to me, because I, just like any other normal child in the organization, I associated with the boys and enjoyed the company of the boys, looking to a career he believes in, what he preached, you know, what he preached. That's what I attack, not his person, because as far as I'm concerned, he's a beautiful person. He's a charming person.
Right.
Yes.
All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll deal with today.
All right.
When we get back.
Right. It's Crazy Eddie's greatest car.
A number of changes in the name of the organization. It started as the Nation of Islam. Then it went to the World Community of Islam, and now it's the Muslim Community of America, and I may have missed a few other names in the process.
Yes.
Why so many changes?
Yes. I had a theory that a word environment was the main structural confines for the membership. Word environment, not the buildings, not even the... FOI or the MGT, but not even the businesses that really kind of gave discipline, physical discipline, and for the routine life of the Muslims. Those facilities or those entities, in my opinion, were not the confines for the life of the Muslims, followers of the Almighty Elijah Muhammad. I felt it was a word environment, and the most powerful language in that word environment was religious, and then next to religious, nationalistic, mm-hmm. nationalistic terminology.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that we had to get rid of that terminology, Nation of Islam, temporarily,
mm-hmm.
until we could get the people to see where they should be, where they should be, where they should be, where their life should be, where they should be living, where they should place their faith, and et cetera, you see. I felt that it was too, well, I hate to say, make-believe, but it was a kind of a superficial, fascinating world that really had no real life to it. It was just a temporary structure for exciting the enthusiasm of the black people and giving them a sense of superiority, a sense of identity and purpose, etc. But I felt it was temporary and kind of superficial preparation. And we had to break out of it and settle ourselves in what I felt was the fundamental teachings of the religion. And
more orthodox, you mean?
Yes, more orthodox, more Eastern, we may say, yeah. So I recommended that we stop using that terminology, Nation of Islam. I said, because what it does is it puts more emphasis on nationalism, nationalistic aspirations, than on religious aspirations. And I feel that what's hurting our life right now and keeping us from having principles that we once had, because Abu Elijah Muhammad, his early membership was really a religious membership. God was the strongest force, yes. God was the strongest force, and next to that, Elijah Muhammad. And then the virtues of the religion, you see. But the program, the economic program, and these things had brought in a new wave of new members,
mm-hmm.
A new influx of members. And these new members, they were not sensitive to those original concerns of the Temple of Islam. They were really excited about money and business possibilities and black pride, you know. So that to me was good only if that original foundation was still there. So I suggested the changes in name for that reason. And I believe in gradualism. And I learned that from my own scripture, the Quran, and from the study in the life of the Prophet of the Muslims, who's Muhammad 1,400 years ago, about 1,400 and a few years ago. I studied his life and how he brought about social change, environmental change, and his strategy was a strategy of gradualism. He wouldn't just knock down a structure altogether if he could save it.
Mm-hmm.
He would just change it and modify it so that it would accommodate the new direction or the new life. And I felt that by changing these names, I would create a different kind of a wave, a shock wave throughout the community. And it was approved. I never forced anything on the people.
Mm-hmm.
I would bring it to the leaders first.
Have you made your Hajj?
Yes, I have. I've made three now.
Three?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. Would you say now that the Muslim community of America is an orthodox religion?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. It's now just the same religion that you'll find in Arabia and anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's the same. You know, everywhere, it depends upon the region. In Egypt, you'll find the Muslims there, they'll be slightly different. But those differences are so slight that we can't recognize any separation, you know. The Muslims of Saudi Arabia, they are mostly of the Wahhabi school. Others will be from different schools, Maliki schools in Africa. Most of the African Muslims, they are influenced by the Maliki school.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, I have told our following that we should acquaint ourselves with all those schools,
mm-hmm.
and not give ourselves in any particular school, but evolve ourselves a way of viewing and analyzing these delicate issues in the religion.
What is the Muslim community of America doing right now? And you seem to be playing a sort of a neuter or a laid back, as they say out on the street, mm-hmm. role. Mm-hmm. You seem to abdicate a lot of the authority that one would expect a leader mm-hmm. to exert.
Yeah.
Is that deliberate and why?
It's deliberate.
Why do you do that?
Because I believe the strongest society is a society where the people are in control.
Is that because you think that that messiah complex is dangerous because
yes,
the messiah
is.
Or the leader can be knocked off
yes,
and then
is.
That's it?
Yes, it is. It keep the African-American third world people from evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we have to do now is bring the people to accept responsibility for the future of their societies.
Do you still identify black people in the United States as Bilalian people or
African American? I prefer the term African American.
Mm-hmm. Bilalian has been.
Yeah, Bilalian is a kind of a religious. It has religious significance for us,
mm-hmm.
but I prefer the term African American.
And where does nationalism, African nationalism?
Yes.
Fit into the Muslim community of America?
Well, we don't have any
has
such
no
nationalism.
Place?
No, it doesn't. It only, as I would say, research material and valuable history and research material. By research material, I mean material from which we can draw strength and also some necessary insights into our situation.
But you're concerned about the liberation struggles in Africa.
Certainly.
And you support that
yes,
and all
we
of
do.
That.
Yes,
you identify Africa as a homeland.
Certainly, exactly. And we believe that Africa has a great future and that Africa has a long ways to go and that the African has to evolve. As Garvey said, he hoped that one day Africa would find her place as a star in the galaxy of nations, you know, the galaxies of nations. We have that same hope for Africa. We hope that Africa will become more united and that Africa will become more an independent continent.
Well, there are several nationalist factions, black nationalist factions, as you're aware of still in the United States, and some might say that Warith Muhammad has not been as loud on, say, South Africa as we'd like him to be. How would
yes.
you answer that?
Well, I'll answer it by saying I haven't been allowed on anything because for some reason I'm not the kind of item or commodity that sells on national media.
Well, you're on not national but local media. I got you now. What's your position on South Africa?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what I said to our national membership. I told them that the government there is an oppressor. We're against it, and we have to support the majority of the African people and their desire to get their destiny into their own hands and to change that ugly situation over there.
You condemn the regime?
Certainly. Outright. Mm-hmm. That's right. In fact, I can't see us tolerating that kind of regime. And I don't think America's history and our success with civil rights justify our government, our president, going easy with South Africa.
With the Muslim community of America, and how do you view the overall condition of black people in this country, say, from the 50s and 60s compared to now?
Yes, well, we have made great success, a lot of gains. We have a lot of gains as far as, I would say, the rise or the growth of small middle class blacks mm-hmm. in this country. But our concern has always been not for elite group or for a white collar group. our concern has been the masses of African-American people. That's the tradition of African-American people. And I find that the masses now are more unstable than they have been perhaps in 50 years. I believe it's because we thought that we had gotten over, you know. I think we thought as a people, as a moving people, as a people in a movement, a moving, a race movement, I think that we, after civil rights legislation and equal opportunity, the end of Jim Crow and those things, those visible, ugly things that were before us, I think that we relaxed our guard and we felt that as a people we had done the job. We had won, you know, we had gotten over. That was a big mistake. Many of our leaders, they never felt that way in their work till they died, and those that are still living indicate that. Dr. Mays and many others, you know, and battling until he died, you know,
yeah.
Trying to sensitize the race, keep the proper census in his race.
Therefore, the Muslim community of America is doing what to remedy that situation?
We are concentrating on several things. For our own immediate membership, we are concentrating on building institutions. The religion. We are building our own religious leadership, our own knowledge and insights into the religion. We are establishing our own leadership as authority in religion, Islamic religion. And at the same time, we are building our schools. We still have our private schools, and they're very expensive to run, as you know. To maintain, very expensive, but and times for us are not good. We don't have the same policy to bring revenue or zakat, charity, into the accounts that are taking care of our school needs. But we still accept that we have to do this, so we're doing it. We're doing it. We're maintaining our schools, and we're building, again, our independent position in education, in Islamic education and in general education.
Where's the money coming from?
Well, the money is coming from charities, still from charities.
Really?
But also we are encouraging our businessmen to grow in business and remember their own community. So we have growth in business people now. We have big growth in business people. We have more business people than we ever had before in our membership. And they are remembering. Many of them do remember us, and they donate to our school and also to our mosque needs.
Are there a significant number of whites that are a member of the world community?
No, not a significant number at all. In fact, they're hardly visible. But we do have a few white members. I say none African Americans. They're not all European, of European origin. We have some Hispanics, and we have some Indians and others.
Do you subscribe to some of the self-reliant economic programs that we're hearing? My colleague Tony Brown is talking about several concepts are being espoused.
Yes, support them 100%. We give them full support because we see the need being the same. We believe that this neglect, financial neglect on the part of the African American community, business, absence of business, business sense. I hate to put it that way, but that's exactly what it is. An absence of business sense on the part of us as a community, not individually, on the part of us as a community, is a very great need. It's a great problem, and it has to be addressed. It has to be dramatized, and it has to be attacked by a collective group, a collective effort, not just one person. So we are supporting what Tony Brown is doing. And
any others getting your support?
Yes. There is a group of people who are trying to promote family pride, family responsibility. The great friend of ours, Walter Fontroy, He is a member of that association. Through their literature, they are trying to educate and trying to induce into the black community a new sense of pride in family life. And they hope that this interest can be built on and built upon. And many of the problems that we find in the community now, in African American community, can be addressed from that strength, from that position of strength. And I believe that it can. I believe that that can happen.
How about that plan called Power?
That's Farrakhan's.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Yes. It has merit too. It has merit. But any appeal that is purely money or material won't work for not only us today, it won't work for anybody today in America. And that's because we have gone too far with the material aspirations. We need the material, but that's not where we should have the focus. The focus shouldn't be there. I think a much better way to improve the economic condition in the African-American man's life, talking about general masses mm-hmm. now, is the family way of Mr. Fauntroy and his people, the family way. Because if you can get them, the money won't stay with us if we don't have social sense, if we don't have family sense, if we don't have social community sense.
Okay. Finally, you're just back from North Africa. Recently?
No, I was in Geneva.
Oh, just Geneva? Have you been to North Africa?
Not recently. No, I haven't. Farrakhan is, he's there, I believe, now, somewhere.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What would you say, or what do you say to members of the Muslim community about what's going on in Libya?
I can't say very much.
Muslim country.
I can't say very much simply because I don't have access to what's going on there. I have no way of getting firsthand information.
You think this country was right in what it did?
Let me say this. I don't think it's good enough to talk about what seems to be the issue right now without going to the causes. There are causes behind all of this. And I think we are doing ourselves a disservice by not also addressing those causes.
What do you mean?
Well, a great country like ours, this is a great country, big country, superpower, and perhaps still maybe the most powerful nation on earth, you see. For this country to be seen by a small country like Libya, a very small country, whose population is perhaps, as they say, well it's like Texas twice, maybe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For a small country like that to see America as its enemy and to see America as a mortal threat, and that's what they feel. They feel that America threatened their lives, their very lives, and they feel that Israel's presence in the Arab land. I know we say, well, Israel has a right there too, but those people, they are looking at circumstances before Israel was created, when that was their land, and the Jews were living there among the Arabs, just as we are living in this country among whites. But this is the country is certainly ours. This is a white people's country. But we have no right to take it over. Now, suppose a minority, we are a minority here. Suppose we would receive support from other governments, powerful governments, that could overwhelm the United States and put us into power in these United States over there. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at a similar situation where a small minority that once lived with them as citizens now threaten their existence throughout the Arab world. And it's, whether we like it or not, it's a militaristic nation.
It's Israel,
an expansionist nation. Yes, it is. It's militaristic and is expansionist. It has been expanding its territory ever since it's been there, and it has been increasing its military might and depending on that for survival there. Not upon negotiations, not upon some kind of a mutual interest or alliance there other than military? Is it been depending on its military might?
So are you saying that it is this tension that is creating the terrorist acts that are going on around the world?
Yes, yes. If people... Now, I'm saying this because I hope that those who are in the positions of power will hear what I'm saying and perhaps give it another thought. You know, I'm sure they've been told what I'm saying. It's not the first time they've heard it. But I hope maybe hearing it from me, and a citizen of America, and an African-American person who has many reasons to be bitter, but I'm not bitter. I don't have that in my system. I love the country. I love the American people. I love being here. I hope that they will listen to what I'm saying and give it a second thought. When great powers threaten the life, the vital life of small power, small people, then those people, if they want to hold on to what they consider to be their vital life, they're going to do something. They have to do something to protect that vital life. They're going to have to do something to defend it. And the massive power of a nation like ours is really constitute a terror, whether we are terrorists or not. Just that power terrorized them. That's too much power. So they're terrorized to start with. They're frightened to death. And I had one Libyan official tell me, he said, "We know we can't win a war with America." He said, "America's too powerful." I said, "Well, they could wipe us out anytime they want to." He said, "But we have a life. We have to live. And we're not going to give it up." And I'm sure there are many more who are not as sober as he was and can't speak about it as he did in the relaxed mood that he had. He himself exhibited. Who are frightened to death, and they feel that Israel and Israel receiving the great sums of money that come from the taxpayers of this country to support it, the great weapons, the great amount of weapons that they receive, the most advanced weapons, they consider all that to be a terrible, menacing presence there, and it terrorizes them. And when you get an animal, a mouse, a rat, if you get him cornered, a little animal cornered, I remember being attacked by a bird. Yes, because I had threatened the nest of that bird. When you threaten the vital life of a small thing, no matter how great you are, you'll be attacked back. So you don't
think that it all orbits around Gaddafi. You think it's a broader problem.
Sure, it's an Arab. It's a problem of the Middle East, Israel, and the Arab people. That's what the problem is.
It's
in Syria. It's in many other states. It's not only in Libya.
I wish we had more time, but we have no more.
I understand.
But it's been a pleasure to have you as our guest.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here.
This is Gil Noble. Tomorrow, May 19th, would have been Malcolm X's 60th birthday. We at Like It is urge all to reflect on his rich legacy to humankind, and above all, tell our children about him.
Transcript $4. Yeah.
It's time for the...